The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Vulcan Capital, the investment house of late Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, has opened its first international office in Singapore. Now, the multi-billion dollar fund intends to invest an initial $100 million across Southeast Asian startups. Vulcan Capital is an unusual addition to the city-state's investment scene, as it's part of Vulcan Inc., which oversees the late Paul Allen's holdings and supports his causes in everything from elephant conservation to artificial intelligence research. So, why did Vulcan Capital decide to open its first international office in Singapore? And what kind of startups are Vulcan Capital looking to invest in? Well, helping me out this morning in the studio with me is Tommy Teo, Managing Director and Head of Southeast Asia Vulcan Capital. Tommy, good morning.
Morning, Elliot.
Start us off with finding out a little bit more on Vulcan Capital. I couldn't help but notice the word Vulcan. Does this have anything to do with Star Trek, my friend?
Well, we love to live long and prosper, but we actually take after the Roman god of fire, Vulcan.
Okay. Right?
And his spirit and mythology behind it is a much longer conversation, but speaks to the idea of being creative and finding new ways to solve big problems here in the world.
And it was founded by late Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, right? What's the overall vision apart from that?
So this would speak to Vulcan Inc.'s vision.
Okay.
And when Paul left Microsoft, he was thinking of different ways to bring about good in the world. There are a variety of ways that a lot of different organizations have done to tackle this in form of grants, okay, or in the form of bringing partnerships and consortiums together. Paul saw things in a very different way. He saw things in a way that you have to apply yourself, right, your talents, in a direct way to solve a direct problem. So, for instance, we do have three research institutes out in Seattle, one focusing on cell immunology, one focusing on brain science, one focusing on artificial intelligence. And these are organizations that use the returns that we generate from Vulcan Capital to pursue research in each of these individual areas for the betterment of one, whether it's healthcare or brain health, or in the case of artificial intelligence, finding these great new breakout discoveries that we can bring to the world.
Very interesting. And you've now decided to open your first international office in Singapore where Vulcan Capital is concerned. Why Singapore?
So, variety of reasons. I think we have to go back a few years ago when Paul and our CIO, Chris Ohndorf, looked at finding a way to have more exposure globally.
Okay.
Traditionally, we have always run our portfolio with a 20 to 30% allocation to international markets. Now, it's easy for you to do public equities or be an LP into a fund or to do a late-stage technology investment, for example, out of Seattle, where we are based.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do early-stage private investments, then you really need boots on the ground.
Right.
And so 3 years ago, we sought out to look for the best markets and really the best location to put this first international office, and Singapore was the choice.
Is 3 years too long to decide on Singapore? Any thoughts on that?
So this speaks to how we work at Vulcan Inc. and also Vulcan Capital. Paul was a person who cared a lot about going very deep into the areas that he was looking to both invest into or to find out more about. And that was something that we thought made a lot of sense. Now, 3 years is a long time, but in the grand scheme of things, we're here to invest for the indefinite future. Mm. Some of the companies that we invest into, we will probably hold for 8, 10, 12 years. And so making sure that you have the right foundations and have done the right amount of research is incredibly important.
Fair enough. It is a form of investment, after all,
Absolutely.
To do research, right? Tommy Teo, Managing Director and Head of Southeast Asia Vulcan Capital, in the studio with me this morning. And talking about investing, startups make a huge part of the economy. You're entering Singapore with $100 million for Southeast Asian startups. Who are you planning to invest in? If you can answer that, any specific sector you're looking at, perhaps?
Sure. So as a start, we are generalists.
Okay.
I think that Southeast Asia as a market is still not deep enough as far as startups are concerned. And it's a relatively nascent market, right? Really only developing in the last 5 years in terms of momentum. for you to be very specific in the sectors that you are looking at. Now, that being said, we are looking into areas such as financial services, real estate, education, healthcare, and these sectors that have very, very large addressable markets today, but also have very large tailwinds driving the growth of these markets in Southeast Asia.
You're talking also about sectors where innovation essentially provides disruption to the regular way of transacting in that sense.
So one of the nice things, I think, of having been looking at the startup space in the last 5 years, I think the word disruption today has sort of gone away. There's really an adoption game now. And I think that speaks to where we are in a very interesting point in the market. And that's what makes it very interesting for us to enter the market at this time as well.
Yeah, startup comes up with a new app and you don't say, oh, he's here to disrupt the market. You tend to say, oh, that's a new way of doing things now.
Right. Or that's the easiest way of doing things.
Sure.
And you know, we vote every day as consumers on our phone, right? And any business that ignores that fact now, I think I question whether they'll be around in the next 5-10 years.
Actually, apart from Singapore, and sticking with the theme that you guys have entered Singapore with this $100 million for Southeast Asian startups, where else in Southeast Asia are you looking at where the startups are concerned?
Sure. So Singapore is obviously a great destination and location that attracts a whole slew of capital and also a whole slew of startups that are looking to grow and develop here. But if you look regionally, it's really looking at Indonesia, looking at Vietnam.
Right.
Emerging ones, but you could almost argue that Indonesia is at the forefront.
Fair enough.
Of a lot of the startup development, home to some of the largest startup companies that have come out. Vietnam, I think, is the next one in line. Mm. Great demographics, very strong talent base for engineers.
Okay.
And also just a great work ethic that, you know, we think is well-suited for the startup space.
Have you invested in any startups yet?
We are about to invest into our first, hopefully, in the next 30 days. But we are really day one here in our minds and looking to get our platform up and running, but really open for business and about to get our first deal done soon as well.
Is there any chance I can find out what kind of industry this deal comprises?
Absolutely. Without giving away too many details, it will be in the healthcare space. Really, really strong founding team, which really speaks to how we underwrite a lot of our early stage deals in startups, making sure that founders, this team in particular, can scale ahead of their business, but at the same time have the ability to do a very clear go-to-market in a difficult environment like healthcare.
Yeah.
So happy to share more down the road, but this is something that we're very excited about and look to get this done in a matter of weeks.
Vulcan Capital setting up its first international office here in Singapore, and they have entered Singapore with $100 million for Southeast Asian startups. So speaking on behalf of a startup that's perhaps listening right now, how can a startup get investment from Vulcan Capital? And the follow-up really is, you guys decide which one you're going to invest in.
Great. So two parts to that question. I think as far as startups are concerned, we are founders first. If you look at our track record out of the US, we have invested into companies for more than 10 years. Some of our positions we held for 15 years. And that's a really long time to have a relationship with a founder and a founding team. And that is always the first layer of analysis that we do.
Okay.
So where have you, what have you done? What is the problem that you have identified? What is the team and the solution that you have put together to tackle that problem or that market? Mm. It's something that we will do almost ahead of any business type of analytics that we do, given how early these companies are. What I encourage founders who are coming to us to find capital for is to come with a clear problem statement, mm-hmm. but also bring your genuine and authentic self,
right?
Because we want to build this relationship with you, and we are committed to also give you our authentic selves in order to build that 10-15 year relationship and start from there. And that's something that is quite unique in terms of how we plan to invest into the region. We are not a typical venture capital fund where we have a 8 year or 10 year life cycle and then have to exit. We're here for the long run. And if we do the right things by founders and by companies, we believe that that will result in the right financial performance down the road. But that all starts at that early stage, that initial meeting, and then the next few months where we get to know these founders and these companies.
So I'm getting a lot of sense of that human element that has to be involved. You're kind of matching or seeing whether the personality of Vulcan Capital can match with the personality of whoever's running these startups.
It's often, for a lot of investors, the first and the last things that they will look at.
Sure.
I think that there are common cultures and values that we like to express. When Paul was alive, this was something that he cared a lot about, and we like to think that Vulcan Inc. and Vulcan Capital share a lot of the same values that we see in a lot of founders that we invest into as well.
Talking about values, so like any venture capital firm, Vulcan Capital aims to maximize returns from its investments, but the returns from these investments go directly into the broad range of philanthropic projects. Could you share with us some of the projects, the philanthropic projects that you guys are involved in?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, something that I find personally very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. In the region, we have a project called the Coral Atlas. This is the first time that any organization, and working with partners as well, has tried to come out to map the coral reefs that are here in the region, with the underlying basis that if we don't understand and measure what coral reefs are today, we don't even know what climate change impact is on the environment around us. And so that's a project that's really, really exciting for us. The other one that we have been rolling out here in the region is a project called Skylight. This is an initiative to use satellite imagery as well as machine learning to help countries detect illegal fishing vessels in their waters. And so this is, again, something that is very tied into the environment and to the oceans around us and ocean health, and something that we look to roll out more here as we go forward as well.
Very nice. Thank you for that. Tommy Teo, Managing Director and Head of Southeast Asia Vulcan Capital, in the studio with me. I want to get your opinion on this. Valuations that startups are fetching these days, we're seeing a lot more unicorns emerging in that sense. Startups fetching really spectacular numbers, yet at the same time, they're not very profitable. I'm thinking WeWork, Lyft, Uber. How overvalued or expensive do you think this so-called tech space might be right now?
So let's take it back. And the names that you mentioned are all fair names to really think about. WeWork, obviously, being the poster child today as far as valuation concerns are related to. But if you look at younger companies, so these would be seed, Series A, Series B companies, where they are finding product market fit, where they're looking for their first five clients, where they've gotten traction with their first 10 clients, call it between $1 million, $2 million of revenue per month. We care less about the headline number, but more around whether the size of the round is right size to the traction and growth and momentum of the business at that point in time.
Okay.
And so you what results in that is it's a very idiosyncratic view around valuation. Mm. In all honesty, the founders will always think that the valuation is too low, and investors will always think the valuation is too high.
Okay.
But when you break it down into the fundamentals around right-sizing the capital for the stage of the business, the amount of dilution that the founders are absorbing for accepting your capital, and how they think about deploying this capital into the market, are things that we will always look at regardless of what the valuation numbers will be. And if you look at a lot of successful investments in the startup space, they will always feel expensive at every round, and that's always been a feature of the market. But they will then really start to ramp up over time. I think that when you start to look at names that you mentioned, whether it's Uber and Lyft, who are now public, are subject to a lot more scrutiny around the business, the onus is really on the management team to find a way to justify their valuations as far as their businesses are concerned. Unit economics, right? Path to profitability, two big areas that investors are always on the lookout for in public markets.
Cause and effect in that sense. Speaking of which, Singapore, there's a lot of talk about a potential recession. We're already seeing some kind of an economic slowdown. Where Vulcan Capital is concerned, are you expected to be affected by this? Expecting Singapore to be affected by this?
So the beauty of early stage investments is that the profiles of founders and the problems that they look to solve are quite different from and not as affected by macro conditions. Now, ability to raise capital will be impacted.
Sure.
But that's where somebody like us could come in in a big way because we don't have any caps on the amount of capital we can deploy. We are deploying out of a single family office. And in fact, in a downturn, we are out there looking for the best opportunities to support or to continue to support over time because we have the balance sheet to do that.
Sure. What about your thoughts on the U.S.-China trade war and how that's affecting this part of the world? Have you personally seen a slowdown in perhaps the U.S. companies investing here?
So I think we are an example of U.S. companies who
are looking
to deploy into the region. I think most observers will say that Southeast Asia will be a net beneficiary of the trade wars. Our CEO, Bill Hilf, also has a very clear view around this, and he uses the analogy of being in an airplane encountering some turbulence, right? It's going to look shaky, but as investors, we do need to hold steady and know that it will pass. Now, it will affect some levels of our underwriting, but we do think that we'll start to see Southeast Asia rise as far as being a beneficiary of some of these trade war issues. I think Vietnam is starting to see some of the flows there. I think our private wealth market is starting to see some of those flows incoming to the market, not just because of the trade war, but in general. I think if you look at what is happening in Hong Kong as well, and this speaks to the infrastructure and stability that we have here in Singapore.
All right. Thanks a lot for that. Tommy Teo, Managing Director and Head of Southeast Asia Vulcan Capital, in the studio with me this morning. Tommy, thanks a lot and have a great day ahead.
Thanks, Ali.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.